You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. Now, Savage has come out with a new model, and that model is the 110 Ultralight. At under 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 Action. This comes in a variety of calibers. It has a gray AccuFinish stock with adjustable comb height. This is an awesome rifle, and basically Savage is at it again. These guys have done amazing things in the past, and now they're doing amazing things in the future. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
Hey guys, welcome back to Land and Legacy Podcast.
We're outside again. Go figure.
Yeah, we're your hosts, Adam and Matt. And, yeah, we're outside enjoying a cooler summer. You know, they say the dog days, but it doesn't really feel like it right now.
It does not feel like it. It feels beautiful. Feels like almost a little bit of fall coming in. And, honestly, to get right into the podcast, we've got topics of fall.
That's right.
Right here today on this podcast.
Some of our favorite gear we've worn and been testing.
Yep.
And give a great big thumbs up for. So you guys can listen, hear why, some of the backstory of why we chose First Light and why we continue to promote First Light. So we've got Mr. Kevin Harlander coming on. I'm excited for it. We're going to jump into it.
It's long overdue too. We've been kind of needing to do this podcast, and I think it's going to hit at a great time, get people thinking about fall and how they can best prepare themselves for whether they're adventures. And I think that people are going to find that this kind of stuff is so much more applicable eastern whitetail tree stand type hunting than originally thought.
Absolutely.
That's the information we want to provide on the podcast.
Absolutely. And it's kind of one of those things, you'll hear a little bit of the backstory where there was a year of testing for us before we ever even agreed to work with First Light. And that, simply put, we don't work with things that we don't believe in, and we don't use things. There's a lot of items that we use that we will never get to partner or work or be dealers for these companies, but it's because we choose that product as being the best for quality and the price. But First Light is definitely one of those opportunities that we love, and we're proud to work with them.
Certainly.
Absolutely. So before we jump in, though, we just want to say, guys, give you a shout-out for one of the partners that make this podcast possible, Stratton Seed Company out of Stuttgart, Arkansas. It is right in the middle of food plot season. There's a lot of seed that's already gone in the ground in northern states and certainly starting here in the Midwest. It's time to order. You can order through Stratton or check out our website, shoplandandlegacy.com, to order the Legacy Blend, Bounty Hunter, Revival,
Emerge,
Cattleman's Treasure, all those blends, and be well on your way, hopefully, weather depending, to successful food plots.
Yes.
Later on this fall. So check them out at shoplandandlegacy.com
or
go to stratton seed.com. All right. We're going to jump right into this podcast. As you guys heard, we're very excited for this one. We're going to cover some of the big things happening this fall, a lot of the gear we're using, and let's just go ahead and bring him on.
Let's do it.
Mr. Kevin Harlander, are you there?
How you doing, guys? Good to talk with you.
Yeah,
man,
for
doing
sure.
Good.
We're doing good.
This is a long time coming, man.
Yeah, we've been working together a little while here. It's been a good journey, and I'm glad to be here. So thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. We thank you for allowing us to be part of the mission with you guys at First Light.
Well, we love to have you, man. I think both of our ethos, you know, are aligned really well, and we've been really impressed with what you guys have been accomplishing, both on the content side and on the land management side. And it's a good fit. So we're glad to have you.
Definitely. As we were talking, like pre-recording, there's so many similarities and differences, though, just from a conservation mindset, that I think is going to really open the eyes of some of our listeners that are dealing with, like, individual bucks and on this small landscape as to really what some conservation realm is that you guys are dealing with out west. I think that contrast is going to be really cool for them to learn about, as well as obviously First Light gear.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So, Kevin, what is your position at First Light?
So, officially, I'm the community manager. So I work as part of our marketing team here on that side of the business, which is growing substantially in the last year or so. I run all our community management. And what that means is I run everything from our pro team with our professional hunters and folks like that. I also run a lot of our industry partnerships. So we do a lot of collaborative efforts across the board, and guys like from Onyx or Federal Ammunition or Weatherby Rifles, whoever it is, I work with all those guys, sort of like align our missions and align our planning. I also do a lot of work on sort of the outbound communication, with regard to public relations, and our guide and outfitter program as well. Lastly, the research and development side, I think is one of my more favorite parts of the job too, is basically getting the prototype gear into the hands of some of the baddest mother truckers out there that get to go beat it around for a year and get us some feedback,
That's awesome.
And then of course, the last part, all the field production and all our hunts and our collaborative efforts from the content side. We travel a lot and we get to see a lot of cool parts of the world and spend a lot of days in the field. And that's, I'm pretty grateful for that because I'm not really good at sitting at a desk. And nowadays it's easy to sling emails from your cell phone I'm happy to be outside more than inside. That's for sure.
Well, yeah. We are like-minded, yes, on that. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So where are you guys, just so for our listeners, where are you guys based out of?
So we're based out of Ketchum, Idaho, which is basically right over the mountains from Boise, central Idaho. And we're in this really cool ecosystem where, we're in the inner Rocky Mountain West, and we're surrounded by three or four different mountain ranges in this big valley, and kind of changes from lowlands, desert, all the way to high mountain lakes and streams. And then, and it's just a beautiful place to live and a beautiful place to test gear too. We're right in the heart of some of the most rugged country in the world for sure.
Sounds like the perfect proving grounds to be able to go out and test that stuff. And you've got adventures really probably in every single direction from Ketchum.
Well, if that's the case, how in the world do you ever get any work done?
Yeah, exactly.
That is a good question. I get a lot of flack from some of our guys, especially on the operations side and all over, that are sometimes stuck looking at spreadsheets more than spending time in the field. But we do a lot of like creative work, man. So like this whole COVID pandemic thing has really kind of put a little bit of a lit a fire under our butts a little bit to like really kind of establish who we are again and understand like, how do we work well together and what do we need to do. Mm-hmm. And we're not always working, but we're always thinking about something on our end for work, And I think that's the difference, is when you work in such a passionate field, from the time I wake up, from the time I go to bed, till the time I go to bed, I'm always thinking about like improvements in my programming or why that zipper should be on a little bit 1 inch to the right on a pair of pants or whatever it is. And I just get kind of consumed by it, and I think that's why it's good to make your work your passion a little bit.
Absolutely.
And it shines through too with a really good product when you can do that and combine both of those things. And I think that's why it's taken off so much and very well respected.
Yeah. I laugh when you say your mind, when you wake up and you go to bed. There's been a couple nights here in the last month or so where my wife has looked at me on the couch and it's 10:30 at night and I've got a pen and paper in my computer and she's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, I kind of smile and I'm like, I'm taking a list of some native flowers or whatever that I'm trying to add on the farm or whatever. And she's like, "Gosh, you're such a nerd." So, yeah, we get consumed with our work as well. So, Matt and I think, you know, it's been almost a year probably, or a little over a year since we first interacted through email and started conversing. And you know, our story of how we came about First Light is a little bit different than probably a lot of people. But being in the Midwest, you guys are out west. It's kind of, there's this, I guess, image that, you know, if you're going elk hunting, that's, or you're going in the mountains, you need really high quality gear. But in the Midwest, people have just, I guess, always gotten by with, whatever, this will work. It doesn't get that cold. But right. Then when you sit, if you're like Matt and I, and you're sitting in a tree stand, and oddly enough, I guess, self-diagnosed, we both deal with the Raynaud's disease, which basically lack of blood flow to our extremities. And so we get really, right. really cold. And in doing that, I don't even remember what fall it was, 2017, 2018, said, I'm sick of it. I don't care. I'm going to start finding the best gear I can.
There was a realization one morning in the tree, and I remember it. I remember exactly which tree it was, like, this sucks. I love and I want to be hunting right now, but at this moment, this is uncomfortable.
Right.
And you don't, you don't want to take something that you enjoy and make it uncomfortable. And I think that just hunters in general are all so particular about the gear we use and what we spend our money on, this and that. It's like, I don't want to risk it or try something that's just, you know, Western wear, if you will, here, because it's just not going to work. Well, gosh, cold's cold.
Yeah.
I mean, bar none, wind is wind, cold is cold.
Cold is cold, you add humidity to that, you need to be prepared for it.
Exactly.
And so in that search, one of our mutual friends, Clay Newcomb, introduced us. And so I guess the rest is history.
But that's right.
In the process of
that, Clay, man, he's a good guy.
He is a good guy. Yes, he is.
Just was able to spend some time with him a couple weeks ago and record a podcast. And, man, that day we just were driving back. Man, you don't find people like Clay Newcomb very often.
Nope. He's a one in a million guy for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you did connect us, because it's been good, and I'm glad you guys have made the switch to the gear too. I think I think you're gonna find this will be your second fall
in the gear. Yep.
Okay.
And I remember, you know, we'll get into it a little later, like as we talk more on the items and different things. But I remember this fall, just overall, every time I got done, I was comfortable. I never was uncomfortable. I wasn't cold. I wasn't hot. I was comfortable.
Right.
And so that alone, and then as we kind of continued to talk and watch your guys' brand, watch what you're doing, that's what excites me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys have a very deep devotion to conservation.
100%.
And so let's talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, First Light was founded on a notion of not just a company that was a for-profit business. Of course, that's important, right? You have to be able to feed your family and take care of your employees and things like that. But it's really founded on this ethos of and commitment to conservation. And I think what that means is, you know, we've realized from a early on stage that the days of being able to simply take from the land are over, right? That ended in the 18th century, 19th century.
Yeah.
And from our perspective, you know, as sportsmen and women, we all have this obligation to help protect wildlife and wild places. And, you know, for a long time, the ethos of America was that, you know, my license fee goes to that, right? Well, it's just simply not enough. It's the same thing of, like, you know, sometimes you got to kick in a couple extra pies for that kid's bake sale because, you know, you want to go on that school trip with your family and your kids. And it just takes a little extra effort. So I think, like, you know, our passion of being outside and hunting and fishing and camping and hiking is really reliant upon, or rather we depend upon the ability to have public land and have, you know, land that is accessible and there for the next generation. So really what we decided to do from an early on stage, and Ryan Callahan, now at Mediator, who was here at First Light for a long time, was largely responsible with our founders they basically founded this program called Roundup for Conservation.
Hmm.
And essentially what that is it's a way in which for people to commit to getting good gear, but also rounding up their purchase towards, you know, a select few organizations who we work with very closely. Everything from the, you know, National Wildlife Federation, the Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, RMEF, the former PDMA and National Deer Association, and things like that. And those commitments, you know, really, really resonated with people, because I think what the difference is we're not just trying to sell you gear. That's part of what we're doing, but and educating people on gear, but we're educating people on how they can drive some purpose behind their purchase. And that's really important to us. And it's a founding principle of the company. And it's also one that will never go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in line with that too, you know, in my mind, and I think the mind of First Light is that in order to protect our hunting heritage, which is certainly under a little bit of attack these days, and guys like Clay Newcomb do a great job of understanding that. And in order to protect that hunting heritage, we need to commit ourselves to taking care of the wildlife we have and bettering our elk herds and our deer numbers and the amount of bitter brush that's in the West and the amount of good feed that's in the East and access for people that want to try to hunt and get into hunting. That's all part of this huge rolling ball that we try to at least be a little bit of a part of, you know?
Absolutely. I think one of the things, too, that people have fallen into a victim of thinking this way is that to support conservation, you go to nonprofits, you go to
right.
these organizations, but there's a lot of businesses that give back and are a big part of a conservation movement. And that's what's so exciting about even just watching First Light's Instagram stories of you guys are all out of the office one day and you're planting sagebrush or you're collecting
right.
seeds from bitterbrush. Like, there's so many things that you guys are doing as a company to get involved
yeah.
in conservation that, I mean, not only are you doing it right there at home, but you're also helping support other people across the country who are putting conservation on the ground.
And it's not,
yeah, exactly.
It's not, let's just say, the collection and reallocation of money that's coming in from the rounding up, but I mean, it is the boots on the ground approach too. It's the hands on. We're going out in there. We're doing this because we believe that much in it. That's
yeah, and you know, sometimes these problems seem so vast and unachievable, right? So it's good to get your hands dirty and understand that you can change one hillside in an afternoon and maybe that allows for some a mule deer bucks to survive the winter, you know, and continue to procreate and you know get more in our species there. And I think it's often daunting, right, to take on those tasks on the ground, but we've done a good job, I think, of both on each end of the spectrum of talking about why it's important, but also doing the things that are important, you know, as well.
Well, you bring up a good point, and I think that, you know, alluding this to this point earlier in the podcast is kind of talk a little bit about the scale of some of these projects and the magnitude of what Western conservation may look like and what you guys are dealing with in comparison to what Adam and I do on a daily basis with working individual landowners on, let's say, east of the Rockies.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, in the West, the landscapes are giant. I mean, we're talking the difference between, you know, like, well, the ranch that I used to work on and when I was guiding elk hunts was 70,000 acres, you know. So you're talking everything from major water projects that you're literally changing the ecosystem to small projects like understanding why a burn in a certain area works a lot better, right?
Yeah.
Now, that's all the scale, right, I would say. And I think, like, from our perspective, east to west isn't really the differentiator. I think it's just different tactics with the same strategy in mind,
sure.
the same outcome. But the vastness of the West, I think, is daunting. And that's why such like large overreaching or overarching strategic moves from conservationists and collaboration efforts are incredibly crucial. So, you know, I've been reading a lot about Teddy Roosevelt just in terms of where we sit today with some of our current policy and current direction on both public lands and you know, resource extraction and all these different things that are, it's a really convoluted and complicated thing. But the idea there is that back in his time, he understood that something had to be done and it had to be grandiose. And I think that there's a lot of people that might have not made that decision, you know, to protect places like Yellowstone or Bear's Ears or wherever. And I think that forethought and that foresight is something that we've tried to sort of latch on to at First Light and understand that change is slow, right? But if we move the needle a little bit every day, we'll be able to kind of take that over and be good stewards of the land and of the landscapes in the West. You know, and then the thing I'll say about the Midwest, I'm born and raised in Minnesota. You know, I went to school in Iowa. I worked on whitetail properties there when I was in college and studied biology and wildlife management. And it's part of my sort of my DNA and my upbringing. So there's something really beautiful about, you know, walking onto a piece of ground and being able to put change in place for the year to come. You know, not decades later or 20 years later or 30 years later, but tomorrow and the next day and even by next hunting season. So that scalability has to be feel pretty good, you know, to be able to balance both this like change that happens overnight potentially and the change that happens over decades, right?
I definitely think so. And I feel like a lot of times we get in that rut of, what's the next season? As soon as one season ends, I'm working for the next. That's a great mindset to have, and you can make that impact. But it's the balance between not only that and the decades and the legacy you're going to leave with that property itself. That's the cool thing.
Agreed.
You know what's interesting about this conversation, and it goes with the conversation we had with Ford a couple of weeks ago, where we were just wanting to catch up, so we called him. Or he called us, I don't even remember, and we were on the phone for 30, 45 minutes, and then we hung up the phone. I looked at Matt and I said, did we even talk about First Light, like clothing, or did we just talk conservation, invasive species the whole time? I think that's all we did.
But that's the truth, though, of those who work with First Light. Ford's another employee there, and it's like, you're not just saying that you're passionate about conservation. Like, you're passionate about conservation. We're carrying on an incredible conversation about that and about the resources that we all love and enjoy, and we're doing things, actively doing things to improve that. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's impressive to me too, and that's something that attracted me to want to come work here. You know, there's a lot of different places you can end up in the outdoor industry. There's also a lot of different ethos out there too. And I think what's attractive about First Light from a perspective of mine is that the people here are not stuck in their ways in terms of how we're going to solve the problem. Mm. Right. So everybody's thinking outside the box, and that's what's really encouraging to me is that, you know, these problems that we're going to face in the coming decades are going to be complex issues. Right.
Yeah.
So it requires the ability to look at a problem, and solve it differently. And that's something we do every day when we talk about development of gear, or when we're talking about, you know, how we can collect sage and bitterbrush seeds in a better and more efficient way. There's a stream of consciousness that all things we do are guided by a certain principle. And that's, you know, entirely, the result of good founders, you know, that really believed in, sort of these ethical business measures to make things better, and it's worked very well for them too.
I love it.
Very cool. Let's talk a little bit about clothing now.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So let's jump in as far as what is kind of the base, or what in your opinion would makes First Light different than some of the other items out there?
Yeah, so first and foremost, that's a great question, and we answer that one a lot. First and foremost is you know, we were the first ever to print camouflage on merino wool. So as a fabric, that is our bread and butter. So we started as a base layer to mid layer company. I think it's almost been 15 or 13 years, something like that.
Oh, wow.
So the idea there is that the technology in which was being used for base layers just wasn't there. It was in the out of hunting space, right? With companies like Arc'teryx and Smart Wool and things like that.
Right.
You know, we printed on merino wool for the first time. And the really cool part about that is, you know, when we look at what merino wool does as a natural fiber, and I can get pretty nerdy on this, so stop me if I'm getting a little
no,
too
I want
to
go there.
I'm happy to jump down this hole.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
I think it's really important, you know.
It is.
It is very important. I'm not lying. Just a few nights ago, I was looking at ranchers or farmers in the United States who raise merino.
I have
merinos.
Done the exact same thing.
I was like, that would be really, really cool to do that. But let's jump down that hole.
Yeah, so, and I appreciate that, guys, because I think what's important here is to realize that the power of this fiber is one of the only fibers that really, really works in a full spectrum of environments.
Yeah.
So, you know, for instance, I start my year hunting season every year in Texas, almost every year. We go down there really early for turkeys and axis deer, and then we start sort of making the pilgrimage north for turkey season. And it can be hot in the spring there, right? So we're talking like, you know, 70 to 90 degrees at times. Mm-hmm. And I can wear the same base layer as I wear on a mule deer hunt in November.
Right.
Or an archery hunt in the tree in Nebraska in October when the wind is just ripping. So the natural ability of wool, specifically merino wool, is that it's moisture wicking, it's scent free, and the biggest part that I think is really important is it's soft to the touch, right?
Right.
So you have this conception of wool, I think, all over the country that is what, like, we grew up with in the Midwest, like those wool rich outer layers that were, you know, button up pants and button coats that were itchy, right? It just didn't feel that good. So the difference with merino is the ability to, you know, take that comfort and basically turn it into an active layer. So, you know, the nice part about wool, and I can reiterate this, is that, you know, it's scent-free, moisture wicking, and quiet and soft. So it just, as a fabric, it's the end-all be-all for efficient hunters, you know, especially ones that are active, but also ones that are stagnant and sitting, right, or stationary. That's really important. So from there, First Light has developed a full line of everything from socks to accessories to incredible outerwear to rain gear, you name it, we make it. So the foundation started in wool, and then we've grown from there. The difference there, too, is, like, you know, when we build products, we build everything essentially in two categories right now. So it's Western and Whitetail. So traditionally, the universal nature of a company usually applied to all categories. So now what we're doing is we're making specific gear for Whitetail hunting, specific gear for Western hunting. But those things are interchangeable here and there too,
sure.
You know, which is really important, I think. And also the last thing I'll say about what differentiates us too, as far as our gear, is that, you know, we're direct to consumer. We don't have any middlemen. We don't have any retail outlets. Everything we do is direct with First Light. So we have an incredible connection with our customer.
Mm-hmm.
When you call somebody, you're going to get either a guy that's been an elk guide the last 5 years, a guy that, you know, is a professional mountain biker and understands how the body works. And what you're going to need. You've got a guy that's at one of those desks that killed a bighorn sheep in the Frank Church last year in one of the most difficult units in the lower 48, and he did it all by himself.
Jeez.
With no guide. And you're going to get a guy that runs ultra marathons and as it looks at mule deer bucks 260 days a year. You know, those are the guys that you get when you call in to ask a question about merino wool. So, or outerwear, whatever. I mean, so our commitment to our customer is that we get to talk to these people every day. And it's an authentic and quite literally a valid person that you're going to speak with. And that ethos sort of shines through the rest of the company as well. So
yeah.
I'm pretty proud of myself. And I almost get, you know, a little bit taken aback when I mention that stuff, because the guys we work with, the men and women at First Light, are incredibly, incredibly valid humans when it comes to both who they are and how they hunt as well. So,
well, it's important that they're actively utilizing this stuff and have the grounds to be able to speak and recommend what pieces need to be utilized for what situations. And, you know, you talked on wool, and I don't think it can just be clarified enough that, like, it is it's a fabric that it's like it almost changes with the time, with its ability to wick moisture but still retain heat when needed. It's crazy how it works, but I don't know. The more you read about it and the more that you have experience with it, actively wearing it, the more it's like, why did we ever go to cotton? I don't get it.
Yeah.
What in the world were we thinking? This stuff is awesome.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing, is to understand that its applicability across different environments is just standalone. So I think that right there is enough for somebody who's like, you know, and I should preface this by saying I've worn it all. You know, I've worn everything there is to try, from cotton to Carhartt to Mossy Oak to Sitka to whatever. And I truly believe in what we're doing over here.
Sure.
Specifically when guys are going to go sit in the tree. Like, I think our whitetail stuff is far and away just a phenomenal product line. So,
yeah, for sure. And we're talking Solitude bibs and jacket that Matt and I wore last fall.
Oh, yeah.
And specifically about this one, when it comes to design for a whitetail guy, you know, there's times for, I think, anybody who's ever stood in a tree stand and had your bibs on, and you're like, man, I love this pocket right here, this like kangaroo pouch or this chest pocket. This is awesome. And then you put the jacket on and you're like, man, where'd it go? I lost it. But you guys have your zip through or your zipper, so you can go through your jacket back into your bibs. It was like, as soon as we wore them last year, I think November 3rd, it was like 6 degrees. We had a major cold front come through. It got super, super cold. And I remember turning around to my brother and going, are you cold? And he's like, nope. Of course, he's wearing First Light too. And I'm like, I'm not cold either. And usually I'd be about ready to freeze out. And that's when I knew, okay, cold weather, we got it covered now.
Well, and I think that's the important thing to remember. And I feel like it tends to be Eastern hunters, they try and distance themselves and say, like, I don't have those temperature swings that I could experience in the Rockies and the mountain. We're not talking necessarily about, like, hourly, day-to-day changes that we're going to go from, you know, 20 degrees all the way up to 80 as you're moving elevation. We're talking this system still has its place when you go from early September all the way through till January in your hunting. That's half a year almost. And it's like, there's a big temperature swings in that where, again, this gear and clothing works all those times.
Yeah, 100%.
What are some of your favorite items?
Oh, man, I think so. In my Western kit, I think that, and across all categories, I think that the Corgi guide pants are a great intro item. That's what I wear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a four-way stretch pant, nylon pant. I think that pair of pants, and then our Catalyst soft shell system is phenomenal. It's a soft shell jacket and pants that I wear a lot early season whitetail hunting. And then if we're talking whitetail, you can't go wrong with the Solitude kit. That kit in and of itself is game changing in the industry. And I think that's one of my favorites. You know, that we came out with a pair of pants called the Sawbucks last year. Which as a work pant and as a hunt pant, it looks like an upland bird hunting pant, but it's a lot lighter. That thing is just outstanding. It does the job, and that pair of pants is just it's just bomb proof. So that'd be my top four right in there.
And that's the Sawbucks, or the quail hunters would call them their brush pants. They're briar proof pants, kind of like almost chap sewn into a pant. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that's an awesome,
Well, that brings up a good point, though, because I feel like as someone who goes and starts to research all the different product lines that First Light offers, not that it's overwhelming, but you could potentially, in your given region, the properties that you hunt, you want to make sure that you're purchasing the right gear for that, if you will, environment, what you may encounter. Like, if you're in thick understory, you may not want some articles of clothing. It's kind of walk us through like how you might make that decision as to what pieces you want to lean to. If you're more kind of field hunting where you're not busting brush or whatever, how would someone go about deciding that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think from our perspective, there is a breadth of stuff you can choose. Right. And you kind of broke up there on the last part of the question. So correct me if I'm wrong, but you're asking for like, what is the both like a lightweight system and sort of like a more brush busting system.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect. So, you know, from the standpoint of like being able to walk through briars and really do it, you want those sawbucks for sure. That's going to be your best pair of pants. And then on the top layer, a merino wool top is going to do just great with, we made a couple different pieces this year, that are intended. They have multiple use cases, but really what I think is cool is that a lot of these, you know, basically what we've created sort of is this shirt called the Ridgeline, right? Which is essentially like a wool protection layer that's not going to be super hot. Really awesome option. That's kind of what I wear when you're like walking through brush, and especially in warmer temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're trying to go light and fast and you're not so worried about brush, the obsidian hybrid or the, excuse me, obsidian pants, are really good. So those things are merino wool pants, not as tough and durable as say the sawbuck or the corrugated guide pant, but incredibly breathable. It's pretty awesome.
We pretty hunted awesome. Out of those.
That's
in
what
early
we hunted
season.
Out of. I think yep. The conversation I had with maybe you, Kevin, when it was early season, what should I wear? And it was like, are you busting brush? Are you? And I was like, no, obsidian. And I'm like, wait, back up. You want me to wear wool in the heat? And
yep.
And you're like, yeah.
Trust it. Trust
just
it
trust in the merino wool. And I'm like, this is crazy. And I did it. I'm like, I am so comfortable right now. Like, I didn't even feel like I was sweating while sitting in the stand like I have in years past. And it's just like,
right.
I don't know how this works. I don't know what's so magical about
but
this merino wool, but it's working. And so,
yeah, it's pretty impressive. That it's just such an incredible material. And, you know, we get that comment all the time, right? Of like, oh, these pants changed my life. And, they're able to actually sit in the tree a little bit longer because mm-hmm. one, they're incredibly quiet too, you know.
Yeah.
And they're just they're a good pant for
sure. I'm gonna talk a little bit about the elephant in the room right now.
Sure.
When it comes to photos that people, because I think a lot of our listeners come from the East or Midwest or the North or the South, and so they may not be aware of you guys in your items. So if they're scrolling the website and they're seeing a lot of pictures, shoot, if they're even seeing pictures of Matt and I,
yeah,
they're seeing suspenders and not belts.
I was just thinking, I was like, we need to bring up the suspenders.
And that was like whenever I first got the items, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to wear the suspenders. Like, I'm not going to a wedding, and so where you see suspenders.
Or I'm not 70 yet.
Or I'm not teaching my high school history class, yeah. So I don't know. And I tried them on, I'm like,
you know what?
Wow, how many years is it before I wear suspenders to church? Because there's something about this. Like, it's so much more comfortable.
If there was a part of the kit that I was just so underestimating, it was totally the suspenders and the usefulness. And I'm like, I'll try it. I will give it. I got to give it a go. And then not put them on.
What is it about, you know, the suspenders? I don't know of anybody that's talked about that. I haven't heard, but it seems like they're cooler.
Yeah,
well, is that the case?
You know, what's interesting is like, so think about this, like as we're developing in the West, you know, you've got packs on your back, you got stuff on your hip belt of your pack, the actual like a leather belt just gets in the way of your pack. So the idea was if you take the basically what holds your pants up and you move it to where there's not less of a pinch point or no buckle like suspenders, you basically alleviate those rub points and you're able to still keep your pants up and go from there. So ideally the purpose of that was strictly comfort, right? And the technical ability, of course, to like keep your pants around your waist instead of on your ankles. But I think they just work really well with our pack systems, and we're always improving upon those. And I think they have a nice place in the whitetail woods too, because they're essentially silent.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas nothing's going to clink on them. There's nothing on your chest, on your belt right below your chest. There's no belt to bang stuff on. Because you know, like we've been hunting out of saddles quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
I
was just gonna bring that in, but yeah.
Yeah. So like when you're sitting in a saddle, right, the less crap around your waist, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So the suspenders work really well too, because when you're climbing with those carabiners and things like that, clinking those and trying to keep them quiet can be difficult sometimes. So I think just it's sort of the perfect remedy, you know, for a lot of different problems.
But it does feel like instead of like cinching, let's say, around your waist, it almost gives it a little bit of like breathing room. It does keep it. It seems like it keeps it a little bit cooler around your midsection.
Well, it certainly did during turkey season.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, that's right.
Even if you're wearing a safety harness too, you know, if you get that thing tighter, you're trying to stretch out, it always does hug right there on your lower back where your belt's at. So it even has some purpose there if you're not in a saddle.
Yep.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
So talking to our guys that are tree stand hunters that spend their time climbing into a tree stand and sitting all day or sitting for 6 hours and then doing it all again in the afternoon – what is it about the merino wool, or kind of talk to those guys on and kind of pulling them in of, okay, how can you benefit by wearing this line? And I should say, I guess jumping into that is, for me, I changed drastically when it came to, I want to be comfortable, and I can buy all this other gear that is a nice cool gadget, but then in the realization that the gear that's touching my skin is what I want to be most comfortable. So I would rather spend there. So, you know, talk to those. Being from Minnesota, I know you know what cold is. So talk to those guys a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So I think first and foremost is I like to think about this in a systematic way. So the first thing that I'm thinking about is like, where am I walking to? You know, where am I getting off of an ATV or a four-wheeler or a truck? And what is that entry going to look like? So when I'm walking to a tree, I'm concerned about a few things. One, scent. Two, sweat. And three, the ability to be quiet, right? So what I'm looking at, particularly with our line, is that you accomplish with merino wool basers, you accomplish all three of those things immediately because you're not going to be dropping scent everywhere. You're going to be extremely quiet and you're going to be very comfortable. The nice part about what we've been able to make in the last, cycle here is that we've got everything from zip-off long johns and merino wool to zippers on our Solitude system. So you can essentially zip all the way to skin. Mm-hmm. So you're not overheating as you get into the tree, right? So essentially what's important to realize is that if you sweat on your way in and you're wearing rubber boots, everything's going to be over if it's going to be cold that night. Because you're not going to be able to, like, as far as your feet go, right?
Yep.
So the nice
Which
part
I think
about,
we've all experienced that. I mean, if you're a whitetail hunter, you're like, oh, I got to wear rubber boots. And you're going
to Well, you're trying to get to the tree so fast, and you want to make sure you're getting there fast as possible and doing it quietly. But
everyone runs late to the tree stand.
Yeah, that's right. So your feet will be wet, right?
Yeah.
But the cool part about your body and wearing merino wool is if you're in merino wool, that sweat's going to wick right off you. So you're going to be immediately comfortable and back to being warm when it's chilly outside. What's really important to also realize, too, is once you're in the tree, it's essential to have the correct layering system. And sometimes guys can be pretty shocked when all you need is, like, a furnace base layer in the Solitude and it's 15 degrees in the tree.
Guilty.
That's pretty impressive, I think. So what I think is important to realize, too, is that being in that tree stand, if you're going to layer up, you have to have good articulation, and so you can draw your bow or raise your gun or glass a buck coming across chasing the doe. So what's cool about our stuff is it's all made with a shooter's cut, so it's tapered, so you're not going to get a bunch of material from a big puffy jacket in your bowstring, or you're not going to be able to, you know, not lift your arms up because there's so many, you know, layers underneath. Everything is articulated to move with you, and, you know, the reason we build this stuff is because our whitetail product line manager, myself, a bunch of people spend a lot of time in the tree. So we understand that if you draw your bow and you're right-handed, you can't have material pilling up in your elbow, or else you're never going to be able to draw your bow back efficiently or quietly. So I think that the idea there, what I'm trying to get at here, is that understanding that merino wool as a fabric, as a foundation, can set the stage for success in remaining warm. And now it's the only thing I wear, you know, I don't, even at our traditional Northern Minnesota hunts, when everybody's in big flannels and wool rich, like, regular wool, I'm still in full merino. It's just, It's just the way to go.
Yeah.
I think the last fall before this, the one that sent me over the edge was I compared myself to the little brother on A Christmas Story whenever they're going to school and he can't even put his arms down to his side because he's got so many layers
right.
on.
That's so right, man.
Yeah.
And so here we are.
And right. I think I wore three layers when it was so cold last year. I wore a thin base layer, the thin merino wool base layer, and then the furnace on top of that, and then the Solitude. Yep. And it was just like, I only have three layers on right now, and this is incredible. I'm still warm. So,
and that was Southern Missouri, too.
Southern Missouri, right. High humidity, 7 degrees.
And everyone underestimates the whole humidity aspect, I feel like. And it's like, there's places in Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, where you're going to have cold days where it's 30, 40, but really high humidity and some wind. Yeah, it's still going to be pretty chilly down there, too. Like, this stuff, it works in those situations as well.
Yeah, we forget about that in the West sometimes, and I have to remind these guys that, a dry cold is a whole different beast than a wet cold. And obviously, growing up in Minnesota, we know a little thing or two about some chilly days, but I think the most important thing to realize, really, when you're talking about stationary environments is that if you get cold, it's very hard to get warm again, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so crucial to have that merino wool base there, because the reason you get cold isn't because, you know, you're a sissy or you've been sitting out there too long. It's because you walk too fast to the tree stand and you sweat and you didn't wick that off your body. And then now it's sitting on your skin and it turns cold and it's over. So I think that probably that factor alone gets people more out of the tree faster when you're in the red zone than anything else. And that's what we're trying to solve, right? Is, you know, our tagline is go farther, stay longer. And the idea there is that, like, I was talking with you guys last year when we were in Missouri and we were out there, I was sitting in the tree for like 16 hours, you know, it was just insane. Yeah. And you can't bring enough sandwiches or books or whatever to keep you busy.
Yeah.
But the idea there is that, you know, our stuff is made to be sitting in a lane or whatever in a saddle, hanging in a saddle or sitting in a tree stand for hours on end with total comfort, you know. And then I'll guarantee that I'll take that all the way to the bank, because that is I spent a lot of days in the tree last year and comfort was never a problem, right?
Yeah.
You know, putting my saddle in the wrong tree or picking the wrong game trail or picking the wrong field edge or, you know, hunting the wrong wind, that's all stuff that now I can focus on more instead of having to focus on my gear. So I think that's what folks could probably understand is let us take care of the things that are easy to take care of, you know, and you know, with good clothing, you can do a lot of things. And then that allows you to go out and focus on killing giant deer. And that's really what we're about, what we're after here.
Well, and I think, you know, we're confident we say this. We took time to test it. And it is everything that either you've talked about, we've talked about on this podcast or previous podcast. I really am a firm believer in it. Like, it's a practical thing, and I'm happy to sit here and say that. We're gonna keep using it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, what are some of the one thing you mentioned it, but new items coming out that came out in 2020.
Yep.
And so one of the big things I'm excited to try this fall is the zip off. I really like this concept. And so I'm really excited to try it as the furnace boot top zip off base layer long john.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, in my head, what I'm picturing is those chilly days, late October or November and beyond. So into December and January, when I have a long walk to the tree stand and I don't want to be bulked up wearing a lot of clothes on the walk. So I'm picturing having those in my pack, getting to the tree stand and just unzipping pants, dropping down, not having to take my wool socks off or my boots.
It's a weird picture to imagine, but keep going.
Yeah, I hope nobody drives by or flies over at this time. And they see me, I drop my pants, and then I'll put these, zip them on, and then pull my pants right back up. Now it'll be in the snap of your fingers, hopefully, so I don't get too cold. But that's what I'm picturing is like, wow, the ability to not have to take off my boots or my socks
because that's one of the biggest things that I think get cold whenever you have to do that, is getting your feet cold in this transition. So that's something I'm very excited about.
Nice. Yeah. You know, the thing about, you just described it perfectly. Like, that is the system we intended, you know, when we built these, is just the ability to just do what you need to do a little bit quicker and stay warm when you need to be warm and cool down when you need to cool down. These are going to be just a game changing piece, I think, for a lot of things. And the nice part I would add just to what you described there is, you know, a lot of people would be worried about how this zipper feels on the side of your leg or how this Velcro shores up at the top of the, long john. And, you know, the interesting part there is, like, it's built in a way that is flush to your skin, so you're not going to feel it. And the zipper is the same thing. It sort of tucks up into itself. It's just a great way to basically understand that, or I should say, it's a great way to, you know, sort of visualize the quickness of this experience without sacrificing, you know, the comfort of a standard long john, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, it's a nice mesh of both worlds.
Yeah. Definitely. Is there any other, you guys came out with a new color, but any other items that you're most excited about for 2020?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I think that one of the things that's really cool is we made these Arrowool tech tees, which I've been wearing a lot sort of just in my summer scouting and my prep. That's been really helpful in the summertime. And then, you know, honestly, some of the socks that we've come out with have really changed the game, because I think, like, if you really think about what's important in a kit, some of these socks that are out there are not going to get you to where you need to be, because you gotta take care of your feet, because that's really the way you make things happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm excited about. We've got a couple of those new ones coming out. And then the Ranger snap shirt is something I've been wearing a lot this summer. It's just it's a nice, classy, almost looks like a pearl snap button-up shirt, but it's four-way stretch nylon. So it's super cool, and I've been wearing it fishing quite a bit. It's been really nice.
We wear it a lot on our consults this summer.
Yes.
Now, getting of age where you're like, I don't really want to wear a T-shirt and get baked in the sun, so I'm gonna wear long sleeves now. So that's kind of our consulting attire, if you will.
Still look professional,
yeah,
with a
like
nice
it.
Collar.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah,
show up comfy.
And you know what? You said that the Arrowool tech tee, I have one of those that I got, and I'm like, you know, I think it's a good, like, if somebody's just like, I don't know, guys, you're talking a lot about wool, is this a sales pitch? Just go get the T-shirt and wear it just around town.
If you want an introductory test,
comfortable
out.
It
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I wish,
yeah,
I'd have gotten more, because I think Matt probably looks at me like, hey, dude, you wore that shirt yesterday.
Yeah, but it doesn't stink, right?
Yeah.
That's
so
right.
You're good. You're covered.
Yeah.
So
just don't skimp on the deodorant price.
I got a question for you, totally unrelated, but you mentioned it, and so I got to ask. So you, Minnesota, and then a portion,
yep,
in Iowa for college, and now,
yep,
and then out west, elk guiding, and now in Idaho. When you,
yep,
come back,
right,
to hunt whitetails, do you still wear a rubber boot for most of the season, or do you stick with a leather boot like you wear out elk hunting?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wore both last year. So my thing is the biggest thing for me is I hate getting stuff in my boots when I'm in the tree stand, because I don't want to be reaching down that way, and they're really hard to get out. So, but I do like rubber boots for the fact that, you know, when you're talking about scent, it's a little easier to mitigate in a rubber boot, especially on the in and out.
Yep.
However, I did have some trouble with some of the sweating we were talking about, just with like an insulated rubber boot. And then I switched over to the LaCrosse Alpha Burleys,
mm-hmm,
and just had great success with those. Great luck. I can't say enough about them. I think the only difference, the only time I wouldn't wear a rubber boot is if I'm doing like those, like where we were in Missouri, there's a lot of public ground we were hiking into.
Yeah.
And it's, you just can't go as fast or as efficiently, you know, with a step in boot versus a lace up boot.
Yeah. And I think,
but the thing is, like, we grew up with lace-up Sorels, like those big puffy winter boots.
Yeah, boot.
So we wore those deer hunting a lot when I was a little kid. But I only started wearing rubber boots after I got sort of dialed in on the archery whitetail side, but, you know, a little later in life.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a
same thing for me.
A question. You go out west, and it's like, man, we get to wear hiking boots. Like, I think we'd all agree that a hiking leather boot is much more comfortable on your ankles and overall spending a long day in them than rubber boots. And, you know, is like, man, I wish I could just do this whitetail hunting. And then I wear the rubber boots early season. And, you know, in the last couple of years, I've been like, nope, I'm wearing leather boots. I think I sweat more in the rubber boots during early season. And,
right.
And so I was curious if you would, if you're still wearing them. Now, we still wear them during the cool season. Then late season, we kind of change things up. But, yeah, you know, that's a ongoing debate we have with guys is why do you wear your rubber boots even in the heat when leather boots are just so much more comfortable and you don't sweat nearly as much.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, I've just switched over to, like, non-insulated rubber boots and trying to figure out that. But, yeah, certainly. I got a really interesting hunt in Nebraska coming up in October on my good friend Jordan Budd's place. So I'm going to be there, and I'll probably wear leather boots there just because there's some hiking situations. And yeah. I think it's just kind of like a game-time decision a lot of times for me.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
So what other big hunts you got planned this fall?
Man, so I drew a really good Idaho deer tag that starts on the 15th of August, so a week from Saturday. And that's going to be – it's a rifle hunt too, which is really cool. But it's in this unit that's just got some really rugged country. So I'm gonna spend some time in there for the first couple weeks. And then once September hits, we're full on with elk. So we'll hunt archery elk here in September, and then I'll head to Montana for some archery elk hunting. And then we're on the road for whitetail. We're going to hunt, Minnesota, Texas, Kansas, Nebraska, and Wisconsin, I think, for whitetail.
Awesome.
And then I'm still trying to figure out a way to weasel my way into either a coos deer hunt or a mule deer hunt in Arizona in late season, late December.
Right.
And then, yeah, we'll just kind of go from there, but it's a full fall, and we're just hoping that everything kind of, is safe to travel, and we're just going to be doing a lot of truck travel. I think I might need to trade in my truck and get one with a little fewer miles if we're going to be driving to Texas and back, you know?
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like definitely a full fall of some Western stuff, but absolutely getting into whitetails all over the country, north to south. That sounds like a blast.
Oh, yeah, it is, man. And the cool part about, like, where we get to hunt is it's kind of like a homecoming for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I cut my teeth and understood that, you know, I was a waterfowl and whitetail guy growing up. And it's always good to get back. I actually get to go hunt my family's place in northern Minnesota. For the first time in a few years, and I'm really excited about that. So
fantastic. So you're from northern Minnesota?
Well, not necessarily. So we spent a lot of time there, but I was actually born and raised in St. Paul. We just had a family cabin that my dad, grandpa built, up kind of near the headwaters of the Mississippi River.
Oh,
so,
very cool. Ooh, nice. I was going to say, if you're from northern Minnesota, where did your accent go?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, too, is I did lose it. I think I lost it when I went to Iowa.
Interesting.
Just because they have like non-regional dialect there, they sound like you know they're from nowhere, basically.
Yep.
No offense to those guys out there.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, man, that sounds awesome. How can they find to learn more about First Light as well as follow your adventures this fall?
Yeah, so check out my Instagram handle is just at Kevin Harlander, the other one is First Light Hunting on Instagram. I think that's the best way to figure out what we're doing and where we're at. And then the best way to find us online is just www.firstlight.com. And you can check out all the gear there. And I'm more than happy to answer any, personal questions at all that folks have about gear or about, certain Western tags or where I'm going to be hunting in the Midwest. And it's always good to make those connections. So if folks want to email me or Instagram message me, that's great. I'm at Kevin Harlander on Instagram, and it's just kevin@firstlight.com.
Wow, there you go.
See enough. Brave soul sending out that
no
email.
Doubt. I've never even given my email on this podcast.
I know. Yeah, well, it's one of those things where it's just like at some point, if folks have a good something good to say, you want to connect with them, and I think it's good to talk with them.
Absolutely, man.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, Kevin. Hopefully that helps some people out and get ready for this fall. And then appreciate everything you guys do at First Light for conservation in the land.
Yeah, and you guys too. And I appreciate talking with you guys. And hopefully this is just the start of something big and bad and beautiful. I appreciate everything you guys do for landowners across the United States. And hopefully we'll get to share a tree here one of these days.
Yes. Yes. Sounds good, man. You take care. Be safe this fall.
Okay. Thanks. You too. Yep.